stand for any member of the audience who wishes to address this board on an item that is not on the agenda. I have no written request to speak, but is there anybody in the audience who would like to speak on an item that is not on the agenda? Seeing none, we will move to the consent calendar. Does any member of the board wish to pull an item from the consent calendar? Seeing none, we'll entertain a motion for approval.
Second.
Motion's been made to approve the consent calendar by Supervisor Chiesa, seconded by Supervisor Rover. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion carried 5-0. We will now move to agenda item B11, approval of the resolution to support Valley Consolidation for UC Merced's medical school outreach efforts.
Yes, thank you very much. I will introduce this topic, if I may. It is my pleasure to introduce to you Bill Lyons. Bill is a major friend to the community when it comes to things medical in nature. Bill is a longtime supporter of UC Merced's medical outreach programs, and is a sitting member of the Doctors Medical Center Board of Governors, has worked collaboratively and positively with the county on many issues respecting the delivery of health care in our communities, and it's great to have you here this evening.
Thank you very much, Rick, and I'd like to thank Chairman DeMartini and the rest of the board for the opportunity to bring this resolution before you. I'm proud to say that I'm a co-chair of the Valley Coalition for UC Merced Medical School, and we have approximately 250 volunteers up and down the valley in a 9 countywide effort to bring a UC Merced Medical School to fruition. Just a few facts. I know that you've got a busy agenda tonight, and I don't want to hold you up at all. The state of California faces a major health care crisis. By the year 2015, the state will have a shortage, an estimated shortage of 17,000 physicians. The San Joaquin Valley historically has been an underserved region in terms of recruiting and retaining medical professionals. The Valley has 24% fewer physicians and 51% fewer specialists than the rest of the state. There are public health consequences of doing nothing, and there's also economic impacts. It's estimated that each year over $845 million and health dollars leaves the valley to other areas of the state where our residents seek the quality health care they deserve. This is especially troublesome for an area which is already economically depressed, with unemployment, foreclosure, and poverty levels among the highest in the nation. Our specific proposal is a distributive model. The medical school will be founded on a community-based distributive model of medical education utilizing current medical facilities in the valley, as well as the resources of UC San Francisco and UC Davis. This is the most cost-effective and fastest way to start up a new medical school. The first 2 years of the medical education will be UC Merced, and the second 2 years of medical education will be in clinic settings in the valley throughout our existing medical facilities. As a public institution, the University of California has an obligation to serve all parts of the state equally. California's future depends on the success of the valley. We cannot afford to leave one area of the state behind, a medical school at UC Merced, while offering health, education, and economic benefits to the valley and to the state. And with that, I'd like to thank supervisors and Rick and your staff for the tremendous amount of support that we've already had on this effort. We are planning a listening forum on July 9th in this very chambers, approximately 6:00 at night. I'd welcome to have everybody there. We hope to have a big turnout, and we'll really discuss in further detail what our plans are for the UC Med School at Merced. With that, I would hope that the board would support this resolution. Thank you, Chairman DeMartini.
And thank you, Mr. Lyons. Questions from the board? Okay, thank you for your presentation.
A comment, please, when the time comes.
Okay. I do not have any requests to speak from anybody in the audience, but if anybody in the audience would like to address the board on this issue, now would be the time. Okay, seeing none, and we'll bring it back to the board for action. Comments from the board? Supervisor Chiesa.
Just want to thank you, Bill, for coming in tonight. I know you're intimately aware of our situation with our residency program, and I think it speaks to the need in the community. We all understand the need and the shortage of doctors and health care, and I think this this resolution here and getting the UC medical school program off the ground will do well not only for Stanislaus County but for the Valley in general. I think it's very important, and I'd like to make a motion to put forth this resolution.
Supervisor Monteith.
First of all, I want to thank you for bringing the resolution, and I'm also aware that you and many others have been very involved in bringing UC Merced to the Valley, and this is a continuation of what UC can do and develop for the needs of the people within the Valley. I think when everyone was talking, there's many people who made contributions in bringing UC to Merced into the Valley, and it was quite a competitive situation. And I want to commend all of us, but probably none of us at that time were thinking about medical school. And this shows what the potential can be, what UC can do, Merced can do for this whole valley. I know at times there were comments, people were concerned, they wanted to have the campus in their community. But the comment was there are no losers in this valley, and I believe this resolution addressing the need and asking for medical school to be at UC Merced proves this issue, that UC Merced is one of the basic foundations of resolving the challenges that we have in the valley. And I just want to thank you once again for bringing that resolution to us. Thank you.
There's a motion on the floor. Would you like to second that?
Second.
The motion's been made and seconded. Further comments from the board before we vote? I was would like to say, before we vote on this issue, that when I was working with the Westside Healthcare Task Force, we're well aware of the shortage of doctors and specialists for the area and what this could mean to the Valley. We have a medical school in Merced. There has been two occasions when Representative W.C. Merced has come to our meetings at the Westside Healthcare Task Force and spoke to us, and those about telemedicine, which is something we're very interested there. I do appreciate their support, and I think this would be just a great thing for the community. Any further comments? Okay, motion has been made by Supervisor Chiesa, seconded by Supervisor Monteith. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carried 5-0. We will now move to item B12, consideration of the In-Home Supportive Services Advisory Committee's year-end report. And Barry.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, County Council, and Chief Executive Officer Robinson. Jeff Lambaron, Executive Director of Link to Care, the In-Home Supportive Services Public Authority of Stanislaus County. Here tonight to present the In-Home Supportive Services Advisory Committee annual report. Hopefully you've all received a copy. And before I get started, I'd like to say a special thank you to Chairman DeMartini. His continued attendance at the committee meetings is always a great positive and brings insight and wisdom to the committee. And a special thanks to County Council Doering and Assistant County Council Burroughs. They did an excellent presentation for us at our annual retreat this year, and we achieved our ethical training and did a fantastic job, took the very sometimes dull and boring ethics training and made it interesting for the committee members. Thank you. And now I will move to the desk, and we have a short presentation for you. This year, as always, we have the message from the chair, the accomplishments for this year, about how the program works with other agencies, the survey results, which represent the bulk of the report, and other information about the county staff that work in coordination with the advisory committee, the committee itself, some facts and figures about IHSS, and then recognition of service. We had some members retire this year. So I think the exciting event this year is that we had our first ever joint meeting with the Commission on Aging, which Supervisor Monteith attends regularly, the Adult Services Advisory Committee, and the IHSS Advisory Committee. And that was the ethics training that they all received. We did our fifth annual survey. We surveyed a random sample of recipients of IHSS and the providers as well. And then our chair attended Capital Action Day to help to try to persuade the legislator to save some parts of the program. And this is just kind of an overview of how the program works. The recipient is basically in the center of the program, and the advisory committee, which provides advice to the board, and the public authority. We have the state, who issues the paychecks. They provide workers' compensation insurance for the workers in the program, and they issue regulations. The unions that represent the providers, and they negotiate with us for wages and benefits. We have the IHSS folks that basically do all the program requirements, determine hours. They help with the payroll. And then we have the public authority. We handle the registry. We do provider trainings, and we offer health benefits. And we are the employer of record so that we negotiate with the union for wages and benefits. The satisfaction survey, and this is the recipient one. The pink bar is the current year. We were very pleased. The consultant, Gina Donahue of Strategic Marketing and Communications, is always amazed that the numbers are so high. This is on a Likert scale of 1 to 5. Once you get the 4.5, it's hard to make the needle move. So we had some good things this year. The first group of bars, the overall satisfaction, we actually had a statistically significant difference, an improvement over the previous year. So people, again, the recipients are saying that they're more satisfied with the program than before. And then the rest of the results, we've had some really good results, and I think the other one I'd like to call out is the one on the end, calls returned promptly. This year we changed the measurement slightly. We changed it to calls returned within 24 hours, working with our IHSS partners, just to get the understanding that many times people call with questions and they don't get an immediate response and they get frustrated, but oftentimes the social worker or the supportive services coordinator they're trying to reach is out in the field seeing other clients. So the fact that they didn't get an immediate response is just the nature of the business. So we tried to change the metric in such a way so that they would understand that calls should be returned within 24 hours. And of course, there's always an emergency line available if it's an emergency for the folks. And I just had a couple of comments from the survey that I'd like to point out. One of the respondents said, "This is a wonderful program for seniors whose income is low. Thanks so much to all for you that started this program, and if you ever need a voice to speak, my daughter will be glad to help anyway. God bless all of you." That was from a family member. And then also from a parent, "I'm greatly satisfied with the overall care and service provided through IHSS. I would not be able to live at my home if IHSS were not here to help. So I think there's a profound satisfaction with the program. The people are very thankful that this service is available to them, and they're thankful for what they receive. We have the provider metrics, and again, the overall satisfaction was increased over last year. Again, calls being returned promptly, tried to, again, get the message out about the nature of the business. And I think one of the biggest positives for us was the second-to-last grouping of bars received paycheck within 10 days. Through the state issued a direct deposit program, and now over 90% of the people that are eligible are receiving their checks via direct deposit. And this has greatly reduced the complaints about people not having their paychecks being lost or stolen. So we're very pleased with that. Again, just one comment from the provider group, and this was from a friend. I think the program is very interesting and concerned about both the recipient and the provider, and try to do the best they can to meet all their needs when they call them. I really appreciate what they provide for individuals in need. Again, one more. And this was from a family member. The part I like best about working for IHSS is knowing that if I have a problem or concern, I can contact IHSS and they're there to assist me. I want to thank you for your support. So, and that's, I think, a direct reflection on the fantastic quality of social workers and supportive services personnel. And the advisory committee members, Robin Foster is the chair, Valerie Mitchell is the vice chair, we have Joan Blackwell, Jose Cisneros, Marie Cochran, Rose Martin, Connie Muller, and Linda White. And this chart represents the districts that they represent. So we have one from District 1, one from District 2. District 4 has four individuals, and District 5, two. So we're a little vacant in your district, Supervisor Grover, and we are actively recruiting people for the advisory committee, and in the report is the phone number to call if they are interested in being on the committee. And then just to give you an idea, you can see that this looks like a stepladder kind of thing. The program is just growing. We've had an average growth over the 8-year period of 6.3%. Due to the aging baby boomers, the fact that people are living longer, and that we have a growing disabled population that are much more active and can take advantage of the service. And then finally, a recognition of service. The previous chair, Mary Birch, retired. Kenny Brown, one of the original members, retired, as well as Jose Acosta. They will be missed. They did a fantastic job. Just life and other commitments have kind of taken their place. So with that, any questions that you have, I'd be happy to answer.
Any questions for Mr. Lindbaron? Let me just ask, because I go to your meetings occasionally, so, and I noticed, you know, there's very steady growth in the amount of people requesting services.
Mm-hmm.
What is the evaluation process when somebody requests in-home supported services? You must send somebody out to evaluate whether or not they actually need the service?
Yes. First, they do an eligibility determination, and roughly, and there's exceptions to this, but basically you're receiving SSI or SDI, you have an income of about $1,000 a month or less. There's a few property exemptions. You can own a car, you can own your own home, and I think the $2,000 in the bank account. So if an individual qualifies on that, the other requirements is that they're disabled or that they're 65 or older. And so the number of people is growing. The process is that once they make the initial call, then their information is taken. If they find that they're on the meet that income level, then they make an arrangement to see the person. I believe it's within 30 days of the application. A social worker goes out to the consumer's home does a thorough evaluation of their needs, so they will assess them based on their activities of daily living. Can you vacuum? Can you do meal preparation? Can you get in and out of bed, on and off the commode without assistance? And based on that, they're scored in each of those tasks, and they receive an overall ranking. And based on that, they're awarded a number of hours per month. And that's basically how the individuals get service.
Has that criteria changed through the years, or it's...
There's been slight modifications that 2004, there was the state quality assurance that came through, and they tried to standardize so that if the person did an evaluation in Stanislaus County and then went to San Joaquin County, they should roughly receive the same evaluation. It's always slightly subjective, but they're very specific criteria in order to make it a consistent assessment. And then, as the, you know, if you go farther back in the program, there have been program improvements. They've increased hours, the maximum hours over time, so that the individual currently can get up to 283 hours a month.
I see. And then there, I've been out with a person who evaluated in an annual evaluation. I've been out 2-3 times with them. Now you still do that?
I was a social worker at one point and did that task. Now, as the public authority, do other tasks, but yes, the social workers still continue to do that.
How many hours a month did you say that they could?
The maximum allocation is 283 hours. And for somebody receiving 283 hours, you'd probably have pretty much a bedbound individual that needed feeding, they need to have, either they're wearing adult undergarments or they need to use a bedpan, something of that nature. So it's very intensive when you get to that level of service. Right. I think our average is about 74 hours a month. So the average individual is receiving about 74 hours.
Okay, well, that's more like it. At that rate, the maximum rate is 9.5 hours. A day, 7 days a week.
Yes. And there are individuals that need that much service. There's a sister program that provides some additional services, but basically 283 hours is the maximum for IHSS.
I noticed in your report that most of the caregivers are family members.
Yes. Our survey results indicated about 65% are family members.
That seemed unusual to you?
No, basically this is a program that grew up to allow family to take care of other family members. It's not traditional employment in the sense that there's an employer like the county that is my employer, so there's requirements that I go to work and do certain things. For this, it's much different. The state pays them. The county authorizes hours. They're represented by a union that basically argues for wages, but it's very convoluted. Again, going back to the... These are all the entities that are in play. So you can see the state has a big portion. They issue paychecks. They provide workers' compensation. They issue the regulations. The county, the blue circle, determines the hours for the program, so they do the individual assessments for the people, and then initially collect the payroll slips and sign off on them and then send them to the state. And then you have the other players in there, the public authority. We provide some of the services for providers and the union as well.
And so say, for instance, in a son that's taking care of his mother, would have to belong to the labor union?
Yes, we have an agreement with the unions that basically it's a closed shop. If you become a provider, you become a member of the union.
I see. And your I noticed the budget this year is $56 million.
Yes. For the program growth, Provider wages that were negotiated in 2006, 2007, and, you know, basically those are the key components of the program.
Does that $56 million that's budgeted for the program also include the social services during the evaluations?
Yes.
Okay. Supervisor Chiesa.
Just one question.
Mm-hmm.
Has the growth of the dollar growth of the program followed the 6.3%, the same line as the growth in actual individuals?
No, not exactly. I think the dollar growth has been greater for a number of years prior to the implementation of the public authority model. We basically providers at minimum wage, and there wasn't an opportunity for them to collectively bargain. They were all individual contractors. With the enabling legislation that was passed in 1999, AB 1682, it allowed the formation of public authorities and allowed the providers to form unions, and through that they've bargained for additional wages and benefits. At a loss at the moment, there is a report. The LAO had a report March of this year, and I think, and I can verify this, but I believe about 40% of the program growth is growth in wages.
I hate to sound inexperienced here, but what benefits come with the job? What is the benefit side?
Okay, the basic... The vast majority of individuals just receive the hourly wage. There is a pool of money that buys health insurance for approximately 500 individuals. They receive medical, dental, and vision insurance. The criteria is that the individual works 75 hours or more per month for three consecutive months, and then they're eligible for the benefits. There's a huge waiting list, and so basically when they reach the eligibility point and call us, they're placed on the waiting list, and then when they move up to the slot that the insurance is available, then they're offered health insurance. They must maintain the 75 hours per month in order to maintain the health insurance. If they lose their health insurance, they stop working. In unfortunate cases, they're primary consumer, a family member passes away, they ultimately will lose the health benefits, and then someone else in the program will get them.
Supervisor O'Brien.
As the state looks at making budget cuts and talked about budget cuts in this program, what exposure does the county have?
The county has a clause in the MOU that allows them to reopen negotiations if something changes in the state formula. So if the state came along and said, for example, recently the state said that we were lowering our maximum contribution, which previously was $12.10 an hour, which equates to $11.50 for wages and 60 cents for health insurance, they lowered that rate to $9.50 for wages and 60 cents for health insurance. If that would have been, we currently pay $9.11. So if we would have been, for example, at $9.75, we could have exercised our option to renegotiate with the union. So we do have a mechanism to, so that all the costs are not just shifted to the county. When we went into negotiations, we worked very diligently to budget and forecast costs, so that we knew what we were buying. And should something change in the state reimbursement formula, we have a way to opt out of this or back out so that our costs don't skyrocket.
Thank you.
Any further questions from Mr. Lambaron? Well, seeing none, we'll entertain a motion.
I'd like to move approval of the IHSS annual report.
To a second.
Second.
A motion's been made by Supervisor Grover to accept the report, seconded by Supervisor O'Brien. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion's carried. Thank you, Mr. Van Buren. We will now move to item B13, acceptance of the internal audit report prepared by our county auditor. Looks like you've been busy going through receipts.
We have been a little busy. Supervisor DeMartini, Chairman DeMartini. Good evening, board members, Chairman DeMartini, Mr. Robinson, Mr. Doring. My name is Laurie Hall, County Audit Controller, and with me this evening is Lauren Klein, who will be presenting a brief summary of the audits that you're receiving today. These audits and examinations include grants, financial compliance audits, cash control audits, purchasing cards, and payroll reimbursement audits. Good policy joined with effective and comprehensive timely public reporting are essential for public confidence in county operations to exist. We also believe these reports provide accountability to the board and to the citizens of the county. I would like to publicly commend Lauren and her staff for the work that you're receiving today. And I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to her so that she can provide a brief high-level summary for the audits.
Good evening, Chairman DeMartini, Supervisors, Mr. Robinson, and Mr. Doring. Tonight I would like to present to you the engagements that have been completed since the last board presentation. First, I would like to thank all of the departments for their cooperation in completing these engagements. The Internal Audit Division has completed 64 engagements of county departments or related agencies, and they consist of the following: one compliance examination, three financial compliance reviews, one agreed-upon procedures engagement concerning county public facility fees, two non-audit engagements of internal controls over cash receipts, 18 payroll reimbursement audits, and 39 purchasing card audits. We examine the county's compliance with the investment policy for the investment of the proceeds from the securitization of the tobacco industry's master settlement agreement as of June 30, 2008. We also reviewed on a quarterly basis the Treasury Statement of Assets. These engagements were performed under auditing standards issued by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Government Accountability Office. Based upon our work performed, we found the county to be in compliance with the California Government Code sections and county policy. The Internal Audit Division began a new series of engagements regarding the county's portion of public facility fees collected through the permit process at various cities located within the county. The objective of this series of engagements is to determine if the city and the county have adequate controls in place regarding the permit process, calculation of permit fees, and the collection of these fees. We have completed one engagement with the City of Patterson. This engagement was performed under auditing standards issued by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Government Accountability Office. During this engagement, we did note the City of Patterson did not provide documentation to support the date the development maps were deemed complete. This date determines which fee schedule to use, which impacts the fee amount charged to the developers and then forwarded to the county. However, we were able to perform alternative procedures to arrive at the correct fee amount. We also noted that the county calculated the public facility fees incorrectly, resulting in an estimated loss of between $179,625 and $264,850. The division previously identified 12 departments that have cash handling transactions that are considered high risk. High risk was determined either by the volume and or nature of these transactions, along with the remote locations if applicable. We performed two of these engagements for divisions within a department. The major findings noted for these engagements were the department had limited written documentation of cash handling procedures and security over cash could be strengthened. The next three slides illustrate the significance of the audits we perform regarding payroll reimbursement and purchasing card transactions. The first screen reflects the number of transactions for both the purchasing card and payroll reimbursement transactions. For fiscal year 07-08, the total number of purchasing card transactions is 32,913. For fiscal year 06-07, which is the last year we reviewed these transactions, The number of payroll reimbursements is $50,355, and that's if the transaction amounts are greater for the payroll reimbursement transactions. The next two screens show the total dollar amount of these transactions in the respective fiscal year. During fiscal year 06-07, the total amount of payroll reimbursements transactions was $751,933. The total amount of purchasing card transactions for fiscal year 07-08 was $5,271,344. The total dollar amount for the purchasing card transactions is far greater than the total amount for payroll reimbursement transactions. However, both of these dollar amounts are significant to the county. The division has completed 18 payroll reimbursement engagements for various departments and related agencies. These engagements are based on compliance with the county travel policy and payroll reimbursement requirements. The periods we tested were fiscal year 04-05 and fiscal year 06-07. The total number of transactions tested was 6,439, and the amount tested was $233,395. Two of the 18 departments had no major findings for this series of engagements. As fiscal year 06-07 is the most recent period we have audited for the payroll reimbursement transactions, the major findings listed in this slide are from that period. They consist of the following: a lack of documentation for the county business purpose in support of the reimbursement was missing, mileage reimbursements lacked destination codes or odometer readings, and the travel pre-approval forms or travel authorizations to support approval prior to travel were missing or incomplete. The division has also completed 39 purchasing card engagements for various departments and related agencies. These engagements are based on compliance with the county purchasing card and travel policy and were requested by the Board of Supervisors in 2001. The periods we tested were from fiscal year 03-04 through fiscal year 07-08. The total number of transactions tested was 23,166 in the amount of $5,755,083. 14 of the 39 departments had no major findings for fiscal year 07-08. As fiscal year 07-08 is the most recent period we have audited for the purchasing card transactions, the major findings in the slide are from that period. They consist of the following: clerks responsible for performing the monthly purchasing card reconciliation performed the procedure on their own purchases in 5 departments. And the monthly reports that are reviewed by the department head, which list the transactions during that time period, were not certified via signature and date and were not performed timely. As you can see, though, from the last 5 slides regarding the results of the payroll reimbursement and purchasing card audits, the county departments and related agencies have made significant improvement as compared to prior periods. And in conclusion, the work performed by the Internal Audit Division fulfills the board priority of ensuring efficient delivery of public services. I'd be happy to answer any questions that the board may have. Thank you.
Are there any questions of staff? Mr. Robinson.
Yes, I would like to take a moment to thank, as Larry has, Lauren and her staff for the work that they do. It's a very difficult task. The transaction numbers are just astounding as you begin to look at individual transactions that are reviewed each year, and they're sometimes met with less than open arms, but always act professional and courteous in their engagements. I want to compliment our auditor controller, Larry Haw, for running such a good internal audit division as well.
If I could just add, too, I certainly appreciate the support of the board that I've received and my office has received, as well as the support of the department heads. I know it's difficult sometimes when they see an internal auditor coming, but they have always been open and forthright with the office, so thank you.
been very helpful over the last, particularly the last 3 years, as we've seen some very significant improvements in the results of the internal audits and the interaction that occurs between the internal auditors and the departments. We had a fairly steep learning curve in the early stages of the audit review process, and as we have been able to go through, identify shortcomings of internal control procedures or record verification documentation, if you will, the overall results have improved significantly, as I think the county and its departments begin to understand what the expectations are. And we do set an extraordinarily high standard for our departments, as we should.
It looks like we've had steady improvement through the years, and I know, you know, from your staff report, we virtually have no really major findings, and what you found are a few minor things. And one of them, I see $3.5 million worth of transactions. You found $940 worth of transactions that you thought might be inappropriate. In an organization of this size, we're never going to have everything perfect, and maybe every receipt accounted for and everything perfect, but when you consider how many people work here and how many transactions there are, it looks like we're doing a pretty good job. Of course, we know that you're looking, too. Further comments from the board? Is there a motion to accept this report?
So moved. Accept the internal audit reports.
Second.
Motion's been made to accept the internal audit report by Supervisor Chiesa and seconded by Supervisor O'Brien. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion's carried 5-0.
Thank you.
Mr. Hall?
Yes, sir.
Sure, we'll see you next year. If we have no scheduled matters tonight, we will move to correspondence.
This board has received a letter from the State Water Resources Control Board regarding petitions for temporary change of transfer of water from the Placer County Water Agency and the Sacramento Suburban Water District to the Department of Water Resources 2009 Drought Water Bank.
Refer to the Agricultural Commissioner and Sealer of Weights and Measures.
This board has received a letter from Barkowitz, Kronick, and Shannon regarding petitions for temporary transfers of water from the City of Sacramento and the Sacramento Suburban Water District to the Department of Water Resources 2009 Drought Water Bank.
Refer to the Agricultural Commissioner and Sealer of Weights and Measures.
This board has received an announcement from the Bureau of Reclamation and the Department of Water Resources regarding the environmental documents for the San Joaquin River Restoration Program's Water Year 2010 Interim Flows Project.
We'll also refer this to the Agricultural Commissioner and Sealer of Weights and Measures.
This board has received a letter from the State Department of Transportation announcing a public meeting regarding the North Corridor Santa Fe County Connector Project on Monday, yesterday, June 15, 2009, from 6:30 p.m. to 8 p.m. at the Riverbank Community Center in Riverbank.
Okay, that has already been referred to the Department of Public Works.
This board has received a copy of the pamphlet Sustainable Development, Global to Local Action Plans from Freedom Advocates.
Refer to the Department of Planning and Community Development.
This board has received a claim that is noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claim and refer to the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Are there any Board of Supervisors reports? I'll just make one comment then, if nobody else has anything to say. I'm never at a loss for words. Supervisor Keyes and I just went today to the grand opening of Sirius' new community center. And they also have the new council chambers inside the building. $6 million project. So it was very nice, too. And they had food, too, so it encouraged me to go. It was a very nice event. Anybody else? Mr. O'Brien, you want to?
I just mentioned that we opened the Regional Water Safety Complex on Empire, and I want to thank members who were there. And there was food there, too, Mr. DeMartini.
I know. I live to eat. Some people eat to live, but I live to eat. Yeah, that was a nice event. And that was a really good collaboration between the state, county, and a lot of local donations. And a very nice project, and it made actually a very nice ceremony. Enjoyed it. Anyone else? Okay, legislative and fiscal management report, Mr. Robinson.
Yes, I do have a few things to report to you. Before I do, however, I was remiss in our discussion of the audit reports. Really, a great deal of credit obviously goes to Lauren and her team and to Larry, but really what makes this program work is the Board of Supervisors' insistence on seeing continuous improvement in the audit reports. That is the message that we carry to the department heads on a regular basis at our monthly department meetings, and the message is received loud and clear. We are not at 100%. Chairman's comments are right on point. We will never achieve 100%, but our goal is always for 100% compliance, and hopefully we'll continue to see ongoing improvement year over year as we move forward and try to make us more accountable. On the legislative side, I'm very pleased to report that the House Appropriations, Commerce, Justice, Science Subcommittee has $250,000 recommended by Congressman Cardoza for the Stanislaus County Modesto Radio Operability Project. As you might recall, the Senate Subcommittee report included a recommendation for $1 million for the project, and we need to express our thanks to Congressman Cardoza and Senator Dianne Feinstein for their efforts in this endeavor. As you know, the state legislature is embroiled in budget discussions with very little positive to show for those discussions on a cash flow basis. Cash flow projections for the state reflect a $2.3 billion deficit by July 31st, absent a state budget, and probably more than $18 billion by October if the balanced budget isn't voted on. We all know that the legislature missed their June 15th initial deadline, and
that's the first time that's ever happened.
I think it may be. And we were really hoping that they could improve on their record, and they didn't. There's a new target of June 30th, which would probably be like the first time they ever hit that target too, if they were to make it. So we're not holding our breath. We just know that the longer the state delays its development of a balanced budget, the more severe will be the cuts on local agencies. Latest information we have on state borrowing from external sources would indicate the state could get no more than about $10 billion in external financing to help plug their budget hole. On the out years, we don't know what the outcome will be. Probably looking at something in excess of $20 billion going forward, even with a quote-unquote balanced budget for 2009-10. Federal bailout money the White House has rejected the California delegation's plea for financial bailout, citing that it would set a precedent for other states in the union. Stanislaus County actions that we have taken, we've hand-delivered to our state delegation the impacts of issues such as deferral of SB 90, previous deferrals, our highway users tax, Prop 42, Prop 1A, and the impacts of Williamson Act subventions if they're withheld. County staff have been in Sacramento meeting on numerous occasions with delegation staff to share information on our local impacts. Some conference committee highlights include the elimination of Williamson Act subventions, an impact of between $1.4 and $1.5 million on Stanislaus County, the taking of our highway users tax funding for 2009-10 without repayment, and a majority of the highway users tax funding for 10-11 without repayment. This has some serious constitutional challenges associated with it. We don't know what the outcome will be. A delay of 2/4 of our Prop 42 funding, numerous proposals to consolidate state agencies, Of course, if we see a consolidation of a state agency, it will probably be a first in certainly my lifetime and many other issues. On the health front, we do have our first confirmed case of H1N1. Right now, H1N1 virus has shown up in more than 70 countries around the world. As a reminder to those persons who may still be listening in our television audience, this is West Nile virus season, so please take appropriate precautions against the mosquito that carries West Nile virus. For more information, you can go to scanemergency.com on these health issues and other preparedness issues. And that's all I have.
Mr. Robinson, there's a court case where the state was not able to take redevelopment agency money. Is that still tied up in court?
It is. I don't believe the determination has been made whether the state will file an appeal on the decision coming out of the Superior Court. There is on the table in the Budget Conference Committee, there seems to be an effort to develop a workaround that would still enable the state to take that $350 million that they had targeted in the first instance. So the discussions are ongoing. The money is still, I think, more secure than it was prior to the court decision. But the legislature and the administration haven't given up on identifying ways to take those funds.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Robinson. Being no further business, this meeting stands adjourned.